Please note, this episode contains descriptions of child trafficking and child pornography. Listener discretion is advised. Advocates and champions can come from anywhere. There is no prerequisite to enacting social change. All are welcome. Heroes are not always forged out of strife and adversity. Sometimes they are crafted from compassion and appreciation. And even more rare are the heroes who take up the cause just because they are aware that it exists and they believe they can help bring it to an end. Advocates like Mitzi Purdue. And yes, both awareness and money are in fact needed. The United Nations recently released data outlining over 40 million people who are currently victims of human trafficking. 98% of them have experienced sexual violence, with women and girls disproportionately affected. Mitzi Purdue is the daughter of one family business titan. Her father founded the Sheraton Hotel chain, and the widow of another. Her late husband was the family business poultry magnate, Frank Purdue. And she is also a businesswoman in her own right. Mitzi started the family wine grape business, now one of the larger suppliers of wine grapes in California. And today, truth be told, I was a little intimidated before our interview. I mean, I've been a longtime admirer of this Harvard-educated, highfalutin, as we say on the horse ranch, dynamo, Ms. Mitzi. Within moments, I was disarmed by this lovely woman. With fears of intimidation in the rearview mirror, I was able to dive right into our conversation and welcome her to Trafficked. We are sitting down at the beginning of January, appropriately the month dedicated to human trafficking awareness. This delightful woman is making such a difference to this cause in a way that is uniquely hers. I am so proud to share her story. I'm thrilled to speak with you today. What a gift. I'm so thankful. I didn't previously know Eli. He had reached out to me on social media and said, I know you're committed to ending sex trafficking, and so is my friend Mitzi. And what a gift.
But it's both ways. And you know, you have standing to talk about it. The only thing I have is when I hear about it, I can't think of anything more awful, and I feel I have to do something. And I'm fortunate because what I can do is I hope needed, and that's raise awareness and raise money.
It's very needed. Kind and benevolent universe that works in our favor.
And you can say that after your life experience. You're giving me goosebumps.
Look, I'm a cowgirl from Colorado, and I had longed to contribute to people. I'd longed for a life where that could have meaning, and I had no idea as a girl what I could possibly do, short of teaching people to ride horses.
And by the way, you're an extraordinarily likable person. I mean, I just feel as if I've known you, even though we don't know each other.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm just so thrilled. I have to say, I was a little nervous at first for our conversation. I've long admired you and, you know, your Harvard education. I was like, holy moly, as we'd say on the horse ranch, you're highfalutin.
But you know, the thing is, I can't even process the notion that I would be intimidating because I'm just me.
Welcome, Mitzi Purdue. I'm so thrilled that you're here today. Thank you for accepting my invitation.
I'm so honored to be here. I hardly know what to do with myself.
And it's so funny. I initially, when we were, the introduction was made between the two of us, I've long admired you. And, you know, whether it's your background of philanthropy or your Harvard education or just all of the things. And I have to say, I was a little intimidated.
My whole attitude on that is I can't even process the notion that I would be intimidating, but thank you. It's kind of flattering.
Well, it is delightful, and you're making such a difference toward this cause and doing it in such a way that is uniquely yours. So I wanted to share your story and help raise awareness in this Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So thank you so much for being here. So if you will, it seems just from the surface an unlikely pairing that ending human trafficking would be your cause. How did you first get introduced to the subject and the cause, and how did it become your fight?
Well, I have to confess, I'm really a newbie in this. And I approach it with all the humility in the world, because I bet there are 10 million people who know more about the subject than I do. But to answer your question of how I got involved, in April 11th of 2019, I had something it literally changed my life. It was a talk, and it was a talk on human trafficking. The person who was giving the talk, his name was Paul Hutchinson. He showed pictures of little girls, and I'm gonna guess they were 12 years old, and there might've been 8 or 10 of them. But he showed pictures of them just before his rescue attempt, or not attempt, because he succeeded. But there were hidden cameras that showed what was going on. And I saw the fear and terror and despair on the faces of these little girls, and I couldn't unsee it. And in the end, I felt, after watching this and being something that I couldn't unsee, it seemed to me that after I learned why they were so terrified, they were used to being raped 10 to 12, maybe even 20 times a night. And they were just little girls. And I'm thinking, this is the worst horror on the face of the earth. It just shouldn't happen to anybody. And my own thinking was, knowing that such evil exists, how can I sit by and not do anything? And how I got involved was, I'm sitting in the audience and I'm thinking, I'd really like to write a great big check to this cause. And that's my thinking. You can't just sit by and know that there's so much suffering and not try to do something. But then, and by the way, am I monologuing too much? Should I shut up?
No, it's extraordinary. There's something about the thinking that was going on at the time. I think that's seminal, because one of the things we discuss on virtually every episode is, what has to happen to raise awareness in such a way that we can all start to see this as our problem, rather than as something that happens overseas or someplace else, but rather it's our problem. And so hearing the critical thinking that went on in your mind, I think is eye-opening, because it displays for each of us what it might look like as we too recognize this is not someone else's problem. This is my problem.
Well, among other things, I have granddaughters, but whether I had granddaughters or not, the suffering that I saw and could not unsee, I expect to devote the years that remain to me, and I'm 79, soon to be 80. Yay.
Yay.
Well, I enjoy my age right now, but I do expect to devote the rest of the years that remain to me to doing everything I can to try to stop such an atrocity. And if it were just one child, I'd feel that way. But how about there are millions? And also, I've certainly read that it's only one child in 100 who escapes. And I further learned that the life expectancy of one of these little girls was less than 7 years, because they were going to die of suicide, overdose, disease, or maybe murder for organ harvesting. And something that evil, once you know about it, how can you sit back and say, not my problem?
Right.
However, I think I have a certain insight into, just from having talked about it in public speaking, which is what I do, I have, I think, maybe above average, or at least some empathy for the people who are listening to us thinking, what can you do? Because the problem is just so overwhelming and so evil. Where do you start? And so with that in mind, I told you that when I was first hearing this, I wanted to write a great big check. But if I wrote a great big check, that would mean cutting back on other charities I'm already committed to. And one of my favorites is the food bank. And I know that if I cut back the money that I spend on them, that may mean, I just didn't want to do it. I thought of every charity that I support, and there was none that I wanted to cut back on. So I thought, what do I do? And then I had an idea. I inherited from my parents a chest that we believe belonged to a de' Medici cardinal from around the year 1600. And I knew if I put it up for auction that it would raise a lot of money, and it would also raise a lot of awareness because it's, we believe, a very historic piece. And I started thinking, woohoo, I could do that. And it would benefit human trafficking. It would have two good effects. It would raise money, probably enough to rescue maybe 100 girls. And then it would also raise awareness, because just the fact of this thing being so historic and being used for anti trafficking, I was thinking, hey, I'm onto something. But then my next thought was, I bet you that there are a lot of the kind of people I address in my public speaking, which is generally family businesses, I bet there are a lot of people in exactly the same situation where, maybe they have wealth, but it tends to already be spoken for. They don't have a whole lot of money available just in cash to devote to something they've never heard of before. But I bet almost every one of them has property. Like, in my case, it was this chest, but in the time since, here's some of the donations that have come in. A 69 carat ruby, perfect, that belonged to a Qing Dynasty emperor. Wow. 12 dinner plates. They're about this size. I mean, consider a dinner plate that you might eat off of. And what's exciting about 12 dinner plates? Well, here's what's exciting. The donor, who hates trafficking and like me didn't have free cash to donate, but he did have, actually it's two brothers, they did inherit 12 dinner plates that belonged to Tsar Alexander II, the guy who was known as the Tsar Liberator. They were made in, I think it was 1822. So they're old, they're extremely historic. Mm. And one of the best parts of it is there are 14 of them in the world, and two are in a museum in Russia, and these brothers own the other 12. And they said that they would donate them. And again, the exciting part of this is when these are auctioned, they will raise a lot of money because there are museums that want it and there are collectors that want it. I think we're talking like in the $1 million range. Oh, when these get auctioned, it'll make news throughout the world.
Yes. Talk about raising awareness. And it's as I originally had read, Mitzi, about you doing this, I thought something came to mind, which is this notion of giving until it hurts. And what I mean by that is this de' Medici chest. It was obviously a cherished, coveted possession.
As cherished as could be, because I grew up with it. My mother had stories about it. Should trace some of the inlays on it and explain that this was made before power tools and that it had lasted all these years, and that if it belonged to a de' Medici cardinal at the time of the Inquisition, we used to talk about what things were signed on this desk. Parting with it. But on the other hand, I invite anybody who owns a material possession of any sort, and if I gave you the choice between keeping that possession and saving 100 girls from the worst suffering possible, which would you do? And everybody I know says, part with the possession. Mm-hmm. But I'm not asking people to part with their favorite possessions. No, the possessions that are coming in most cases, they're items that were in storage, or the second wife doesn't like them. Mm-hmm. Or I'm in negotiations right now, and I don't know where it will go. But there's a guy who owns a hotel. He's in his 80s. He has no heirs. even that may be, even a hotel might be put up for auction. And there's a guy in Argentina who has a yacht. And, so the people, I love giving until it hurts, it doesn't have to hurt, because, you know, anybody who's listening who has an item that's valuable, that maybe they're tired of, or it's in storage, or whatever, we can get you a grip. I mean, I don't know everybody's individual tax circumstance, but there's a very good chance that it could mean, you know, an amazing tax deduction. But then I do have to say right off that COVID-19 interrupted all of this. So
interrupted the auction process.
Yeah, because I talked with the auction house, and I at this moment I don't want to say the name of the auction house, because the auction house is making an extraordinary deal for me. If it's one of the high value items worth $1 million or more, because we hope to raise $100 million. If it's a high value item, they're going to forego their 20% commission. So somebody who puts up,
wow, extraordinary,
let's say a jewel or a hotel or a yacht or a whatever that's high value, their entire donation will go to the anti-trafficking organization of their choice. So there's no 20% commission involved. This is a friction-free way of converting tangible property into cash. Yes.
And I want to explain what I mean by give until it hurts. I think in the process of making this our problem individually, each of us, I think to give ourselves as close an experience as possible to standing in the shoes of these victims and survivors, it's to let it hurt us in some way. And if it's just parting with a beloved possession, fine. But some way of internalizing this to truly make it our fight, our problem. And additionally, I want each of you listening to make sure that as you're listening to Mitzi speak, you are still keeping yourselves firmly on the hook, myself included. It's not like, oh, well, yeah, I don't have anything of $100 million.
Well, hey, I got other things to donate, therefore. Trust me. That's the attention getting part of the
episode. Oh, absolutely. But I want
volunteers
listening. Yes. But precisely, volunteering. What can we contribute? How can we raise awareness? It's so extraordinary. This idea that you've come up with of giving things of value to each of us brings the fight home. Mitzi, brilliant.
And the long-term plan is an auction. It will probably be maybe more than a year from now, because the auction house said right now, you know, you can sell items, but they're not going to bring top dollar because people are too worried. They don't know what the future, I mean, they're just, people aren't going to bid up the prices as high as they should.
Understood.
But after that auction, which will be the attention getting one, and you know, it's global. There are news outlets throughout the world who are going to be interested in this. So we should get some really high price. The auction house guessed that, say, the 12 plates, supposing they were supposed to get under normal circumstances that they might get $1 million. They're estimating that with the global publicity that they could get 2 to 2.5 times. So, and but I'm getting away from what I really wanted to communicate, which is the high value auction will raise lots of money and lots of awareness. But after that, we want to have an auction for everybody. And at that point, you know, things that are important to you and that can put you in the give until it hurts situation. Oh, I've got to tell you, you will feel so good after that hurt.
Yes.
I think we're talking 2023 by the time the auction for everybody takes place. But meanwhile, I have something I can ask people for right now.
Please tell us.
Okay. And this isn't my idea. It's the idea of a woman named Margot Desterhaus. And she, Yeah, she hates human trafficking. I mean, she cares deeply. And she came up with this idea and asked if you know, what I thought of it. And here's the idea. Rosie the Riveter, and for the younger members of our audience, that may not be a familiar name, but Rosie the Riveter, somewhere around 75 years ago, she was the symbol of women who left their homes to work in factories. And by working in factories, they freed up men to go out in the battlefield and defeat one of the worst things that had ever happened to the planet, the Nazis. So Rosie the Riveter, she played an important role in defeating Nazism, you know, the kind of organization that sent 6 million Jews to the death camps. So, you know, she played an extraordinary role. Well, this woman, Margot, a volunteer for my organization, Win This Fight, came up with the idea, let's have a 21st version of Rosie the Riveter, but we're going to call her Rosie the Liberator. And Rosie the Liberator is a campaign in which we invite people to, whether it's a man or a woman, if it's a man, it's going to be Rusty the Liberator. But Rosie the Liberator, which is a 21st century version of the woman from World War II, we're asking people to take a photograph of themselves in a Rosie pose. And Rosie was absolutely famous for kind of looking sideways at the camera and making a muscle. Yeah, kind of showing powerful women, which of course I love. And we're inviting people to take pictures of themselves in a Rosie pose and then post it to social media and make a $5 donation to the anti-trafficking organization of their choice. And by the way, my organization is all about raising money for others. So if anybody who supports, say, what you're doing, if they want to make a $5 donation and put up on social media a Rosie the Liberator or Rusty the Liberator pose, we invite them to donate $5 to you and then to invite two more people to do it, or even better, 10 more people to do it. And you know, what's really neat is I've done it myself. I've taken myself in a Rosie pose, and you know, it's pretty easy with a selfie. You just take it, and I don't care what the background is. But, and again, you know, I'm describing something that I don't know if it will happen or not. Probably won't happen, but the idea for this, it got the attention of Good Morning America, and I got a phone call from them saying, you know, if we do a story on Rosie the Liberator, could you come to New York? And you know what? I think I could manage. Yes, I think I would sacrifice going to New York for this. But the only thing is I haven't heard from them since. So I did hear that they're discussing it, but I think a week's gone by and I haven't heard a peep, so it may not happen. But I'm excited that they even considered that the idea was worth it.
Yes. In the meantime, we can all start getting out our Rosie poses. Mitzi, my grandmother Josephine was one of the Rosie the Riveters.
No way! No way! Yes.
She worked in a steel mill.
Wow!
Pueblo, Colorado during World
awesome.
War II. And it was, she tells stories. I'm going to share a story with you about
please do.
So my grandmother used to say, she would talk to me about steel. And she would say, you know, they cart in the iron ore from the mountains. They had a steel mill in Colorado because of they would mine the ore in the mountains and then just bring it down to the plains in Pueblo where the mill was. And she'd said, they would bring in this useless iron ore. It's just this useless substance. And they would throw it in the smelting ovens and burn it and let the fire purify it and then take it out and burn it again and burn it a third time, she would say. And then they would just, it would burn away all the dross. And when they would be left, all that would be there is the strongest substance known to man, steel, she'd say. And all it would have to do is go through the fire. It only needed to endure the fire to become this strong. Now, I foolishly, as a girl, just kind of thought, oh, okay, she's talking about steel. But I have to tell you, after I was kidnapped, I didn't tell anyone. The way I thought I would survive was by holding it inside and pretending it didn't happen. And I kept reflecting back on my grandma's story, my grandma, this Rosie the Riveter, about steel and how all it needed to do was endure the fire, and it would become the strongest substance known to mankind. And I think really that's there for each of us if we surrender to it. Life throws the fire at us, and it can come out of seemingly nowhere and blindside us. You're widowed, you know what I'm, the fire of which I speak. And I think at the same time, if we are able to endure the burning without fighting back, without saying, oh, why me and this burning? It's something everyone endures. But I think it can leave us in this state of being resilient and having grit and being strong and having the strong that only comes from being tempered by the fire. Thank you for this beautiful Rosie the Riveter. I mean, Rosie the Liberator now, metaphor. I think there's so much that each of us individually as well as collectively can lean upon with this image of this strong woman who she in herself and all of the iterations of her that there were across this nation really defeated Nazism. That's remarkable.
And you know, to me, the idea is just so appropriate that
yes.
Well, first of all, I love paying respect to those women who came before. Yay. and you know, and I kind of think it keeps the Rosies of 75 years ago, it helps keep them alive because we're going to try to struggle too.
Yes.
I just think it's such a beautiful idea. And Margo, who thought of that, thank you yet again.
It gives us shoes, mighty shoes to step into these days. If you think about it, that's such a beautiful parallel between the Nazism of the past and human trafficking of today. It's this seemingly insurmountable obstacle, enemy, scourge upon humanity. And yet if we come together in, like you'd said, that pose, flexing our muscles,
yes.
And showing our strength, and our solidarity, there's an opportunity to make a true difference.
Cheryl, I know that because I'm nearly 80, I certainly know who Rosie the Riveter was. How much do younger people know? How do they relate to it at all? Or
I mean, you know, I was blessed to know about Rosie through my grandma.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that the image is so iconic.
Yeah.
You know, the bandana in the hair, the bright yellow shirt, the muscle flexed, the we can do it.
Yeah.
You know, I think the image is so iconic that I think I don't know. And I'm not blessed with children to ask a younger generation, but I think I could certainly imagine that it lives on, that it's reappropriated that image for so many things.
I think
it lives on.
Yeah, you know, if this works out as I hope, people who might not have known about Rosie the Riveter will learn about her.
Yes. I can't wait to take my own photo and post it. It's such a good idea. What a brilliant way to galvanize people toward a cause. $5, right? It's like anyone can
$5
or more.
Yeah, I mean, just a little behind the scenes thing. There was a big discussion among the people who were working on this. Do you make it so that, you know, if somebody wants to give $100 or $200? And I would much rather have loads of people at a smaller amount. I mean, I think I would have chosen $1 if it were practical, because I want people, and I don't want somebody to think, oh, I can only give $5 and other people are giving a lot. No, let's just make it $5 so that, you know, maybe for some people that's going to mean giving till it hurts, but I would sure rather have them than not have them.
Yes.
I mean, I wanted, it was deliberate as could be, to have at least for many people an affordable price.
And then I think one of the things that it affords as well is the opportunity for so many people to have skin in the game.
Yeah.
And have the experience of I'm doing something. So, okay.
There's the question I get, absolutely no, stop it, speaking of people, you know, wanting skin in the game. The question that I get most often is, what can I do? And, you know, at my age, I've got free time and I can do it, but I recognize that if, you know, a younger person, maybe with a job or young children, they're not going to be able to devote full time to this. So I wanted to create an organization where there's lots of small things that people can do, and where they can put themselves in the game, even though they're not able to give the commitment that somebody in their 70s or 80s could do. And so, you know, I have a promise to all the volunteers that I will do everything that I can to make sure that we don't ask you for more money or more time than you want to give. And I will do everything that I can to match your skills and interests with the jobs that you're assigned. And yeah, there's in a big organ, I don't know, well, this isn't big compared to some, but it's fairly big. The range of skills that we're using to me seems just mind-boggling. And I'll share one.
Yeah, please. And this is through your organization, Win This Fight.
Yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yes. And we're now on the name of Win This Fight. I had originally thought that I would call it the anti-trafficking auction. I mean, that described what we were about. But one of the volunteers, very early on, maybe within the first 2 or 3 weeks, he wrote to me and he said, Mitzi, that name, anti-trafficking auction, sucks. but I'm happy as can be, because if somebody doesn't criticize, how are you going to get better?
Right.
And so he explained what was wrong. He is a neuroscientist. And by the way, this is on the topic of how we can use just all sorts of areas of expertise.
Yes.
But in this case, the guy's a neuroscientist, and his specialty within neuroscience is neuromarketing.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, what's wrong with your name is, how about everything? There's, it's not easy to remember. And I have to give him that. Yeah. And anti-trafficking auction, it doesn't roll off the tongue.
Right.
He says, there's no call to action.
Oh, yes.
And he said, that's terribly important for neuromarketing. And then he said, the best, whether it's a tweet or a campaign, whatever, it really helps if there's some wrongness to it.
Mm.
Because that sort of sticks in your mind. Well, let me tell you why you and our listeners are going to remember winthisfight.org. Here's why. Because the initials of it are WTF. Yeah. Now, I've had people wonder if I knew what WTF normally stands for. And of course I do. but that has the little bit of wrongness. And by the way, the guy who, the neuroscientist who came up with this, he actually went to the trouble of going to, I think, register.com to find out if the domain name was available. And yes, it was. So like campaigns that we have, well, if people have either a cell phone handy or pencil and paper handy, one of the campaigns we have is text WTF to 51555. And people who will do that, it's pretty easy to remember WTF. And then if you text WTF to 51555, the glorious thing is you don't have to remember my website name. It'll just take you there. And before you even get there, you have the chance to say, I'm interested in volunteering, or I'd like to donate, or tell me more. So the name, Win This Fight, it would never have the name if it weren't for a really smart neuroscientist who came up with it.
Well, we can, it's just so brilliant. We'll put the number and what to text and everything in the episode notes so that anybody who doesn't have their phone right now, you know, that's not able to text right now can access that in the episode notes afterward. That's a fantastic idea. So there are many opportunities, am I understanding correctly? Many opportunities for people to contribute and volunteer through your organization, Win This Fight. So if for the people that are asking, what can I do? You've got resources there for people to get involved.
Yes, and I'll tell you one that I'm looking for right now. Actually, I'd love a dozen people who were good at this. It seems to me that there are all sorts of organizations who would love to be part of the Rosie the Liberator campaign, but how do we find them to make sure that they know about it? Well, I need researchers who can find like the following. There are a great many organizations in the United States and for that matter in the world who have made like one of their premises that they're going to devote money to anti-trafficking or skills. How do we find them? And somebody, I bet listening to us even, there's somebody who has the time and the ability to research and find who those organizations are. And if they'll get me a list of them, I'll contact the people. Or what about organizations of retired people? I mean, certainly AARP, but there are others who just love to have Rosie the Riveter be acknowledged and admired and brought back to life with Rosie the Riveter. So if there's, you know, if anybody who's listening to us has research capabilities who can find out, for example, retired people or any constituency who would love to know about that Rosie the Riveter is being recognized and honored and admired in this new effort, Rosie the Liberator, or still another. I bet you that in our audience, there are people who are artists, graphic artists or fine arts or cartoonists. I would absolutely adore for the Rosie the Liberator campaign if we had artists, cartoonists, graphic artists who would show, I mean, I love photographs, but wouldn't it be great if people could have like humorous cartoons of Rosie or maybe modern art versions of it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so if anybody who's listening, if it sparks something in you to create something artistic of Rosie the Riveter, because honestly, art kind of jumps past our logical brains and crawls right into the heart. And I would love to engage artists in this. And for that matter, does somebody who's listening to us have the ability to find the names of arts organizations, preferably if they're members of them, and if they'll contact me, I have a form letter already, you know, a template where they could communicate with the arts organizations, inviting them to contribute art to Rosie the Liberator, with the idea that it's raising awareness about human trafficking.
Yes.
Cool?
It's just so cool. There are so many ways to get involved. I think you've demystified it. It's similarly, I hear people asking the question, well, what can I do? And so often people think that it's just donate, right? It's somehow spread the word about it. But you've provided so many tangible, real world things that each of us can do to, in fact, win this fight.
And other things that they can do. I've been a writer all my life. I wrote a column for Scripps Howard that went to 420 newspapers, and it was the most widely syndicated environmental column in the country. But that means that I've got a background in media. And so it's fairly easy for me to write articles, but I would love it if other people would write articles about trafficking and we could sort of be like a central place for it. Or maybe there's somebody listening to us who has skills in, for example, web management. Because one of the things that I would love to have is for all these Yeah, there's flowing in this wonderful like group of photographs so far, where people are imaginative. Like one person has their pet in a somewhat Rosie the Riveter. But I would love for somebody to manage a contest in which we go through it, and there's somebody with more imagination and background and skill than I have. But wouldn't it be neat if there were a contest where we could recognize the most imaginative or the most appropriate or the most original?
Yes.
And maybe put out newsletters about that or press releases about that. You know, highlighting, you know, this week's most original is, and then send out press releases.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Oh, I just, the long range view that you have on it, Mitzi, is brilliant, because it doesn't limit it to just Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Because the problem, there's a good and bad thing with Human Trafficking Awareness Month and then Human Trafficking Awareness Day. Well, the good thing is it can help raise awareness. The challenge is, I think it's easy mentally to put it away and put it on the shelf then until next year, as if the problem goes away when January is over, which couldn't be further from the truth. And you've got this long range view that just keeps expanding the message and expanding awareness. And that's where it all just starts to come together.
Then I have to share with you something just too good to be true, but
please.
I just got an email this morning from a guy in Hong Kong who says that he's going to muscle up and have a Rusty the Riveter. I mean, a guy from Hong Kong. And then there are people in England. This Rosie the Riveter was American, but I think the image, the guy from Hong Kong knew about it.
Yes. Wow.
And the more global it is, the better, because the problem is global.
Agreed. That's phenomenal. Oh, it has been an absolute delight to have you here today. It's eye-opening. Thank you for sharing your expertise and, most importantly, your heart.
You have it. The issue has it.
Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with today, Mitzi?
I'm thinking of a quote that kind of guides my life, and it's the following. And it comes from Mother Teresa, whom... what a fabulous woman she was. But, well, quick story. It's a 60-second story.
Please.
When she was living in India, she was like a teacher in like a convent school, and she had a very sheltered, nice life. But she wanted to leave the convent, and she wanted to go out and care for lepers. But she, as with her vow of obedience, she couldn't just go do it. She had to get permission from the higher-ups, who tended to turn her down, telling her, you know, there are like tens of thousands of lepers right in this city. You're not going to make any difference. And so, no, stay in your nice, comfortable convent. And her answer, which sort of guides my life, I mean, your aspirations can, you know, certainly exceed your ability. But here's something that I would like to point my life towards. She said, "It's immoral to be discouraged by the magnitude of a problem. The good that we can do, we must do." And so I challenge everybody, the good that we can do, we must do.
Yes. Wow. I'm floored by that. I'd never heard it before. Thank you. And thank you for sharing it so that we too can have that be a guiding principle. It is an extraordinary place to stand.
Oh. Well, I'm not saying I achieve it, but I do say that that's the way I'd like to go.
Yes. Mm. What a delight. Thank you, Mitzi.
I can't even tell you how much I've enjoyed this. I feel as if I've met a kindred soul.
Likewise. Thank you, my dear. If you or someone you know has been taken for sex trafficking, or you suspect that's happening, call 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233-733. With your help, we can stop human trafficking now. To keep up with all of our latest work, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Trafficked Series. Please be sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to our podcast, and listen and stay tuned for season 2 of Trafficked, coming very soon. Until then, I am your host, Cheryl Hunter, and we are here to end human trafficking. So remember, if you see something, say something. This is a Conveyor Media production. Host and creator, Cheryl Hunter. Executive producers, Colin Whelan and Rebecca Sermons. Head producer, writer, editor, Celine Beth Calderon. And music by Mickey O'Brien.